Well, if you was comparing her magic trick to my authenticity, then yeah, I needed to see if it was magic. Now, welcome to Highly Questionable. Right? With Dominique Foxworth hating on my hair because his don't do the things like I do. And L. Duncan, that's all you. That is all you.
Today.
Beautiful.
Today.
Do all of these upsets make the NCAA tournament more or less interesting?
All right, we got four double-digit seeds that have moved into the Sweet 16. Woo, Cinderella. Syracuse is not Cinderella, all right? UCLA is not Cinderella. I don't care if the coach's son is running things for Syracuse. I don't even know who the hell plays for UCLA. That ain't Cinderella. They just ain't that good this year. Oral Roberts, good for you that you made it through. I've already forgotten who that other double-digit seed was that made it through. But year in, year out, this is borne out by television ratings. People love the Cinderella early, and then we want to get them up out to paint so that we can get some names that we recognize. There is a reason why the highest-rated first four game anybody can remember was Michigan State UCLA this year. Because usually, Cinderella isn't actually that good at basketball. You like the idea that they won, but you don't want to watch them play. Now, if these teams had a Steph Curry-like figure on them, that would be something. But for me, the most disappointing part of this first weekend of the tournament is no one player really jumped out and made himself known. That other double-digit seed, I just remembered. That was Oregon State. Yep. Y'all Oregon put Cade Cunningham out of the tournament. How in the hell is that a win for the rest of us when Oregon State hadn't been good since I was in the fifth grade?
Exactly. So I'm with you. I'm not a big fan of upsets. It seems like you are going for some momentary joy in place of like an extended, enjoyable experience. That tells me something about you that I don't like. It tells me that you married the first person that you met. It tells me that you are a selfish lover. It tells me that you spent your whole STEMI check in one place. That is not a good thing. If you want to watch Cinderella's, go ahead. You can watch the Summit Conference Tournament. Like, they have a ton of Cinderella's fighting over each other, but you don't watch it because you don't care about that. We care about names, be it the name on the front of the jersey or the name on the back of the jersey. And none of these Cinderella's ain't got no names that you care about. Maybe Syracuse. We know who they are. Maybe you'll show up to watch them. But the rest of y'all don't care nothing about Sister Jean or the people that play basketball for her. And I'm glad you brought up Cade Cunningham. He's the only reason why I wanted to watch this tournament. I've been hearing all year that he's the second coming. I couldn't wait to watch Cade Cunningham cook these college fools. And now he's out of the tournament because y'all beloved Cinderella got excited. No thanks.
Let me apologize on behalf of the pessimists that are sitting alongside me on this show, because there are still plenty of storylines. Like, listen, it sucks. Our brackets are busted. I think there's a certain level of intrigue that maybe disappears when, again, your brackets are busted and you don't have a vested interest in seeing that through. But there are a few storylines that are still happening right now in the tournament that we can be proud of. You mentioned Cade Cunningham, and while the nepotism crowd is sad to lose him, they still have Jim Boeheim, right? He struggled so hard to recruit top talent, they decided to just spawn one instead. There's something for the septuagenarian crowd. Leonard Hamilton, back in the Sweet 16, he's just the third dude to do it in his 70s multiple times. So there you go, old people, you got something too. We've got the Pac-12 on their Rodney Dangerfield tour. They've got four teams in the Sweet 16 after being largely disrespected this year in favor of Ohio State and the Big Ten. What happened there? And lastly, and most importantly, you're talking about big name players. Hello? We've got the ironic hero that we're always looking for in March in Cameron Krutwig with Loyola, who sort of looks like something between an HVAC specialist and a stepdad who maybe specializes on the weekends with installing solar panels for his neighbors. I'm all in on this tournament because at the end of the day, I love that the Blue Bloods have gone belly up. Let's get some new fresh blood in here.
I don't really want no parts of that. Like, you talk about the new pit snoggle. Like, if you go, like it was cool to have a one pit snoggle. We don't need a, like, recurring pit snoggle situation with this NCAA tournament. We don't really need none of it. The only thing, the thing that would make this little Cinderella run worth it is if somebody at CBS would have the heart to say, Oral Roberts University. Do y'all remember that time that Oral Roberts got on TV and said that if I don't raise $8 million in a year, God's going to call me home? That would light me up. We can do that.
Does LeBron no longer feel indestructible?
All right, now, this feels like a bit of hyperbole because LeBron James is, in fact, a human being, and he has suffered two injuries in the last 3 years, which are basically the two injuries that he has suffered in his whole career. He had the groin injury 2 years ago, and now he's got the dreaded high ankle sprain. But as hyperbolic as that sounds, you remember hearing that story that Brian Windhorst tells about LeBron in the game twisting his ankle the other way so bad that it looked like a right angle, like his shin, and then his ankle hits the ground. And they come talk to him in the locker room, and they ask him, is he going to play? And his response was, does he have a choice? And now that guy is out indefinitely with this high ankle sprain. Yeah, it does feel like he's not indestructible. And on top of that, just how bad is this injury for them to be telling us that it is an indefinite injury? Because sometimes you can come back in 2 to 3 weeks off of one of these things. If there was any chance that that was possible, they would have told us that off the top. I have no idea when this dude is going to come back. And yeah, it doesn't feel like he's indestructible. And I'm not sure he's going to get back in time for the Lakers to get everything back together. And oh, by the way, whatever happened to that Anthony Davis guy? All I know is that his calves hurt and he's out indefinitely too. Where they at?
I see. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I really don't. I feel like every single year, it's not a big deal, Bo, because to your point, yeah, it could take 2 to 3 weeks. Hell, don't they have like 7 weeks left in the season? It could take 5 weeks and they'd still be fine. Are they going to lose some seeding potentially? Probably without both of those players, but that doesn't really matter right now in the current NBA where there's no such thing as home court advantage or for the Lakers. We do this every single year in the regular season, or at least the years that LeBron has won. I remember back in 2012 with the Heat, it's like, can the star of the ill-reputed The Decision, who also faltered in the 2011 finals, overcome the nerds on radio and finally win? And in 2016, like, the Cavs lost like 2 straight games in March, and it suddenly became Kevin Love is the worst and they only play when they have to. Like, what are we actually doing, Bo? I'll admit, I was sitting there last year, right, when they, for 10 days in the bubble, sucked during the preseason. It was like, are the Lakers really as good as we all believe? Should Jeannie Buss sell the team? It's just a joke. This is what we do. We want to create adversary and turmoil for LeBron James, and every single year we do it, especially when we're looking for reasons. It's always blown out of proportion. Yes, this is a high ankle injury, but if you think anything is going to keep LeBron James from joining his team come playoff time, you're crazy. It'll be fine.
We all love LeBron James, especially because this network loves LeBron James. But I refuse to talk about his injury when LaMelo Ball, a much more important injury, just took place. So there are 2 months until the playoffs. The Hornets could actually miss the playoffs, which I know you think doesn't matter, but we know playoff experience matters. And in the 30 games between now and when the playoffs start for the Hornets, they could get knocked out of the playoffs. And LaMelo, we won't get a chance to have that LaMelo showcase that we all deserve, and he won't get that experience that could lead him to becoming one of the league's MVPs in the next several seasons. So, yes, it matters. And in a small place like Charlotte, a team that hasn't had very much success, the potential of one of their players winning Rookie of the Year, that matters too. And that's up in the air now too with LaMelo Ball's injury. So I don't care about LeBron's ankle. In 2 months, he'll be fine. Tomorrow, if it was a championship game, he'd be fine. He'd tape it up. He's still indestructible. Let's talk about LaMelo Ball, because not only if he balls out, do we get him back? We get LeVar back. No, I don't care what you say. I want more LeVar in my life.
Now, hold on. Let's talk about how LeBron James just suffered this legitimate serious injury, and L out here acting like we making this stuff up, right? Like, every time, y'all just make it too much. They won't even tell us how hurt he is, but I'm the one that's out here making stuff up. What we got to remember about LeBron, though, and this is the part, forget about indestructible. The dude is 36 years old. Like, we can't just keep assuming that he is going to heal and recover at a rate that he did at a previous point in his career. He'll be back for the playoffs. What's it going to look like when he comes back for the playoffs? And again, did Anthony Davis have his calf amputated? What exactly is going on here? It didn't sound like it was that big a deal before. Now it's making me wonder if he's got a partially torn Achilles.
Up next on HQ.
That is as bad as that Saints game where the Rams had that pass interference that they got away with. That is atrocious.
I love that play. That call is one of my favorite calls in NFL history.
You know,
it's
bad.
Great no call. Great no call. Bad meaning bad. Bad meaning good. I love that. The only thing better than that was that time that them two Saints ran into each other while Stephon Diggs was running the other way.
Incredible.
I'm sorry. I should never bring the Saints up again.
One of the pettiest, best moments of my Falcons husband's fan's life.
Do you question which Luka pass was more impressive?
You know, I would actually rather sit here and question all the people that really started this season swearing to me that Luka Doncic was going to be the MVP this year, and he's been nothing close to it, but y'all still talk about him like he's the MVP. Anyway, let's look at some of these passes.
Sleight of hand.
Pretty impressive.
It's not bad.
Get a close-up look at that.
Oh,
oh yeah, no, that's dope. That's yeah, dope.
It's fire.
All right, let's see what else we got here. Huh. Nice.
Okay.
I mean, I'll give him this, boy. He is fun to watch, even if y'all overhype him. He is entertainment.
Can I say I'm more impressed by, I know the first one seemed cooler because it was like behind the back, and but I think the second one, right? Because like it looked like he was about to turn the ball over, and the recovery, I sound like a mom right now. I'm like, he fell and tripped, but he still found a way to make it manageable and make it a fantastic play despite that. I sound like such a mother, but I think
You
better.
Don't sound like a mom. You sound like an NBA beat writer.
Okay.
That's what they sound like talking about him.
I don't think it's close. I think it's the second one by far, but I want to give some credit to Hardaway and Kleber. Like, you got to hit the shots. No one cares about the highlight unless you hit the shots, and they are ready to catch. You saw Kleber right there with his hands up. It seems like Luka's a fun person to play with. You're going to get these passes every now and then. You're going to be excited. But the Luka highlight that I'm waiting for is a compilation of Luka standing in front of somebody. Give me that. Give me that compilation. Like, I'm not to the point where Bomani is, where I'm annoyed by all you who say how good he is, because he is great. But I do, at one point, want to see him slide his feet. Just one time.
Do you question if Troy deserved to beat Texas A&M?
All right, we're going out to the women's NCAA basketball tournament, Troy and Texas A&M. And I have to say that a lot of people have wanted us to give more shine to women's college basketball. I think our network's doing a good job of that. And the biggest losers of that, at least in this moment, are going to be the referees. Yes, we are looking at you like we never have before. Oh, they call that a charge.
Wow. Let me see. Oh,
man.
Yeah.
Yo.
That's close.
Oh, no. What a terrible call.
Really? Okay.
That is an awful call. All right, let's get one more here. What do we have? Now, they did not call over and back. The play clearly starts in the front court. It is touched in the front court.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
The foul, I feel like, could be argued. The over them back is obvious, but there wasn't much time left to close that game. I tend not to, like, blame the officials when there's a last-second call like that, because they normally bounce themselves out through the course of the game. But this sent me to the box score, and it seemed like Troy had 25 fouls to 13. So maybe they're just aggressive on D, or maybe the refs had it out for them. I don't know what it is, but they had 7 more free throws, A&M did, than Troy, and I think that's the difference of the game. Or the fact that Troy went 4 for 23 from 3, that'll also blow it for you. So I don't know. I hate to blame the refs, but they stink in this spot.
Semantics. Look at Fox pulling up the box score.
You better stop.
You better stop it. That was so clearly, flagrantly wrong. And there's nothing wrong with blaming refs when it comes down to the very end. Because, yes, we could do that and we could mince and take a look at a game from beginning to end and say, there's all these opportunities to win this game. So let's play this or that. You got to get that right if you're a ref. Like, this is the big league. If you are going to be on
23 from
it
three,
doesn't and yet L. And still they had 2 pivotal calls down the stretch go against them, and they lost by what, 2 points? So miss me with that. Despite all of that, they had an opportunity at the end and they were largely let down.
Guys, we're missing the most counterintuitive thing about this whole situation. If you could run one of these clips one more time for me so I could point it out, I want you to look at that floor. Look at those logos. Look what it says. Look what all this is. How the hell the Aggies playing games in Austin and getting all the calls? Like, I know the refs were not provided locally, but all I'm saying is that should never happen for them in that building ever.
Do you question if this was traveling?
What I tell you, the refs are the biggest loser in us doing a better job of paying homage to the great female athletes of our country. We're going out to Oregon State and Florida State. Here we go. They call it travel.
What? Oh my God.
Travel. Wow.
Go ahead, Fox, defend that.
Nah, I mean, it's indefensible. I think that what we had that TikTok video, like, get all these changes with them getting a real weight room. Like, they need to put this out there. TikTok video of how terrible this officiating is and get them some refs that can see, because that is as bad as that Saints game where the Rams had that pass interference that they got away with. That is atrocious.
I love that play. That call is one of my favorite calls in NFL history.
You know
it's
bad.
Great no call. Great no call. Bad meaning bad. Bad meaning good. I love that. The only thing better than that was that time that them two Saints ran into each other while Stephon Diggs was running the other way.
Incredible.
I'm sorry. I should never bring this up.
One of the pettiest, best moments of my Falcons husband's fan's life. Like he was crying all day of just sheer joy from pettiness because the Saints did that. It was amazing.
Feels great.
Who that saying they gonna beat this Saint?
Remember that time Marshawn Lynch hit Tracy Porter with that ultimate to finish Super Bowl champions, lost in the playoffs to a team that went 79. I remember that.
Yes. Oh so my sad. God.
You Falcons was, fans. Yes.
It was Bobby. All good just about a week ago.
I love that. Why couldn't the Saints lose to Loyola? That would have been dope.
Correct. Wait, where Tulane at? Did they make the tournament?
Y'all got
problems. Did Tulane make the tournament?
No. New Orleans is such a beautiful city. Why do you guys
hate it
so
much? I love New Orleans.
Never get it twisted, Fox. Falcons fans don't hate the city of New Orleans because that city is amazing. Okay, they hate Saints fans specifically.
And Tulane fans too, apparently.
I'm sorry, real fast, Fox. What? Who are the starting quarterbacks for the Saints this year? Who are they?
Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston.
Ah!
Did she break the microphone?
I think she did.
Tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, Heat and Suns.
All right, the Suns been very good this year, second in the West. Chris Paul, he matters. The Heat been on a roll, and they might get Kyle Lowry because he says he has a great relationship with Jimmy Butler, and maybe he does, but the big thing is they have the same agent. Now, let's get a look at referees hating on fun. Look at this. There's Bam. Oh! And they called a charge.
Oh, hater.
That was not a charge, number one. It was also a little unnecessary to put his knee in his chest. But the refs went and reviewed it, and then they came back around and were like, dude, we're hating on fun. Elle, are you intrigued?
I'm definitely intrigued, but largely because I found out, I was 2 years old when I found out that there's some rumors that Tyler Hero is going to be traded from the Heat. And, well, I haven't checked in on Tyler Hero since the last time I cared about Tyler Hero, which was in the bubble. So I'm going to have to start watching my favorite Heat player for the first time this season before he's gone.
If they trade him to Toronto, he going to learn the words to Informer. You remember that? That's going to be him.
Snow?
Dominique, are you intrigued?
No.
You don't see it? Dominique, are you intrigued?
I am intrigued, but not because of the Heat necessarily, as much as the Suns. I think they're number two in the West right now. They're playing incredibly well. I picked them in the preseason to make the playoffs, so I would like to toot my own horn. They've been awesome. I think it's tempting to give a lot of credit to CP3, which he deserves it, but I think they are one of the few teams that built off of what they did in the bubble last year. Like, they were amazing. If you remember, we only remember the finals in the bubble, but they were amazing before we got to the bubble playoffs. They built a team that's impressive, and I like. Of course, I love CP3, but Monty Williams deserves some love, too, for building that up. And Tyler Hero, he can't play anywhere but Miami. Like, that's a rule. I think the NBA needs to make that a rule.
I don't know. A licky boom, boom down. He'll get to Toronto, and he'll find his crew.
Wait, real quick, Fox, who did Monty Williams used to coach for?
New Orleans.
Streaming online, Fierce Talk with Ryan Garcia.
All right, so Juju Smith-Schuster, who turned down more money to play for teams like the Ravens and the Chiefs, to go back and play with one-armed Ben Roethlisberger. All right, I guess. He's on a podcast with Ryan Garcia. He's a boxer, and he's talking about his TikTok dancing.
It was like when I was dancing on logos and like doing TikTok dances, bro, everybody was just like, yo, that's the reason why you're losing. No, we're not losing because of that. We're losing because we're you know?
I mean, he's right. Like that was kind of what the situation was. They did kind of stink. It was that. Elle, are you intrigued?
Watching that entire interview just reminded me of how like young Juju Smith-Schuster is, right? Like I honestly don't know how old he is, but I get big like 23-year-old energy from him. Bruh, I'm like on TikTok and I'm like, yo, you're and then I'm just like, she's butt. And it's like, whatever. I just don't, like, I don't know how to relate to people like Juju Smith anymore. And I finally realized and embraced my full 30s, because whatever he just said, whatever just came out of his mouth, sort of reminded me of a conversation that I would have with a wide receiver in high school.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not here to judge. I just accept that I'm old. I don't think TikTok or whatever social media is the problem necessarily, but he has shown some pretty bad judgment. You don't want to go play with Patrick Mahomes. You want to come back and play with, as Bomani named him, one-armed Ben Roethlisberger. The important thing to point out about Bomani calling one arm is the one arm that he has is not the throwing arm, just so y'all know. So I'm going to go down and figure out what I'm doing with Patrick Mahomes and do all the damn dancing I can do. I understand maybe you want to go play in Lamar Jackson's system where you're going to be blocking possibly more than you're catching, but you could have went down there with Patrick and you came back to Pittsburgh?
Yo, we don't talk enough about the fact that Pittsburgh saw Ben Roethlisberger last year and was like, oh, well, run it back. Why? You must be running backs. Like that's what you need to do, but throwing the ball. Oh, no. That is our show. Check out L. Duncan on the 6 o'clock Sports Center. Check out Dominique Foxworth at The Undefeated. And on Foxworth Friday on the right time. Download wherever you get your podcast.